beware and prepare for something spine tingling, something horrifying, pure terror to your eardrums. This is Epic Film Guy's B-Sides.
Ding 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 ding.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. That'll be all.
Thank you, gentlemen. That'll be all. Welcome to a B-side. That's right. It's been how long?
What?
Epic Film Guys B-side. It's been so long. I don't even remember the last one we did. It's been like a year, isn't it? Has it been a year? Are you really that lazy, Loy Sauce? Are you really that lazy?
It's more like the opposite. It's more like I've just been really busy.
Really busy, huh? Yeah, busy. Yeah. I don't know what you're doing. Who knows
and
what
also,
you're doing?
I didn't say that. I presented you with a list of different B-side episodes that we could do, and you didn't say anything to me, so that was the end of that, I guess.
It's a lie!
It's the truth. Well, no, but we're back.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. We took this opportunity.
The men behind the mask.
That's right, motherfucker. We are the men behind the mask. And last October, we ran down most of the films of the Halloween franchise. And we specifically left out two films for a very good reason. Loy Sauce hadn't watched them. But in anticipation for David Gordon Green's brand new Halloween film, which is my number one most anticipated movie of all time. Actually, just this year, but it is my most anticipated movie of the year. We figured we would actually sit down and watch two movies that most fans of not just horror films, but of movies in general don't really regard that well. They kind of hate it. They talk a lot about it. And actually, if you go on message boards, forums, Facebook comment sections, anytime it's ever mentioned, there's always a spark of controversy. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about Loy Sauce. Why don't you tell them? God damn it. Our first B-side, and I don't even know how long, and you had to be eating. I'm not surprised, I guess. I'm not surprised. Is it at least Halloween candy? Are you eating candy corn?
I'm eating... I wish it was candy corn. I'm eating cucumbers.
Eat them goddamn candy corns, boy!
No, it's cucumber. Anyway, we're going to be talking about Rob Zombie's Halloween and Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. They're very creatively titled.
Yeah,
Halloween,
I know, right?
And Halloween 2.
It's a... These are two films that have been mentioned many times on the Epic Film Guys podcast. Even Epic Film Guy Nick, yes, he has seen at least Zombie's first film.
What, really?
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he's seen the first one. And he's commented on numerous occasions. But I figured, again, in anticipation for David Gordon Green's new movie, which I'm so excited for. I know you're right up there with me, right? You're just as excited, almost as excited as I am?
Maybe not quite as excited, but it is... probably my most anticipated film for the rest of the year. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there you go. Huge Halloween fan here. It's one of my favorite franchises, even though a lot of the sequels suck. Over the weekend...
Most of the sequels suck.
Quick story. I like a lot of them, and I love... We talked about it on our Halloween film series retrospective back in October, so if you haven't listened to that yet, go back in our library and check it out. It's actually a lot of fun. But over the weekend, Brian, there was a Halloween-related experience that we had. We went to an old record store in Falls Church, and what did you find? You found something really awesome, actually.
I found Anchor Bay's limited edition tin DVD release of Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, which, if you remember from the B-side that we recorded, is my favorite film in the Halloween franchise. Not really. It's probably down at the bottom, right there with Halloween Resurrection. Those are the redheaded stepchildren of the Halloween franchises, for sure. Anyway, I found this DVD tin, which was very well presented, still in decent condition. The tin itself was a little scratched, but I bought it Can you believe that? I bought Halloween 5.
I can believe it because I handed it to you and said, you should probably buy this. And I was wondering if you would. And you walked out and you had it in the bag. You fucking bought it, dude. It's so, it just goes to show that a shit film can get great packaging and get great respect. And I'm not going to lie. When I was young, when I was like 16, 15-ish, and really started getting in the Halloween franchise, I actually liked 5.
It's the worst of the worst.
Some movies, you get older and you... But I mean, the packaging for this thing, oh my God, like this tin case, it comes with a nice booklet with great quality pictures and a jewel case and whatever, but you bought it, so...
I bought it for the... I guess I bought it for just like the novelty of it. Like I appreciated the fact that it was in this used or vinyl record store, and I don't know, just something about it said like, Brian, you should buy this, and I did. And
you know what? To be fair, if you don't want it anymore, I'm sure you could put it on eBay and sell it for like quadruple the price, and some Halloween fan out there is like, I fucking love 5. It's the best of the fucking franchise. He'll buy that shit for like $1.50. But all that aside, though, we are going to be sitting down right now. It's a B-side, ladies and gentlemen, talking about Rob Zombie's Halloween films. And we're going to start off, of course, with his remake. And it was one that was actually anticipated by a lot of fans. I'm going to go back circa 2006, okay?
Inside every one of us, there exists a dark side. Most people rise above it. But some are consumed by it.
I was at a time in my life, I still am, where I support remakes and reboots. I don't have a problem with them. I've never had a problem with them. And I think that sometimes they could be just as good, if not better, than the original film. Or at least add something to them to make them interesting. I get that Hollywood's been making remakes since the dawn of Hollywood. I mean, think about the old Universal horror movies, the monster movies. I mean, it's an ongoing thing. It's not anything new. So it had been a long time since we got in a Halloween film. Halloween Resurrection was the last film I had seen in theaters that was a Halloween movie, and it was god fucking awful. I don't know any Halloween fan. That's one film, Brian, that I know. I don't think anyone actually legit likes that movie, except for the whole trick-or-treat, motherfucker. You know, of course, there's fun to be had with that, I guess. But there was anticipation in the horror community. It was Rob Zombie. He was coming off of Devil's Rejects. You know, a lot of people loved that movie, myself included. And he had done House of 1,000 Corpses. He seemed like a really great choice to helm a new Halloween. A lot of fans were like-minded in the sense that we don't want it to be Carpenter's movie. We don't want you to do the same thing. If you're going to remake it, make it your own. And we knew that at that point in time that Rob Zombie had that gritty, more dirty looking 1970s exploitation look to his films. So it was a great pairing. It felt like it was going to be the perfect way to see a new Halloween. I had supported every trailer. I thought every trailer was great. I could not believe how excited I was. I bought the shirt. I had the poster. You name it, dude. I was that guy first in line. I actually, Brian, took the day off of work. The first day, opening day, it was like an 11:30 a.m. showing at the same theater Nick goes to all the time, still to this day, the AMC Theater in Vestal, New York, on the Vestal Parkway at the Town Square Mall. I took the day off, and I sat there, and I watched this movie. And, well, the movie ended, and I sat in my seat all the way till the end of the credits. I drove home with no music on in the car, and I thought about it, and I got home to my place. My apartment was like only a mile away, and I sat out on my porch, and I couldn't understand something. It felt weird. How could I go to see a new Halloween movie and not immediately walk out loving it? It was the strangest feeling I'd ever felt in that point. I didn't know why. And then as years went by and I revisited this film, it became very apparent. It was very clear why I didn't like it. And I'm going to get into that as we review the film. However, our good friend Loy Sauce here, the god of podcasting himself, the co-host of Epic Film Guys B-Sides, had never seen any of Zombie's Halloween films. So recently, we took advantage of that and we decided to sit down and watch them. So I want to give it to you first, Loy Sauce, because you're coming off fresh, man. This is something you just watched for the first time only a few weeks ago. What were your initial thoughts on Rob Zombie's reimagining of John Carpenter's Halloween?
Well, I guess I should preface this by saying that I know what Zombie was going for, and I admire the different direction that he decided to take this movie, because obviously Zombie was interested in the psychology of the character of Michael Myers and what would happen in a young boy's childhood and in his mind that would lead him to murder later on in life, or early on in life, you know, because he kills his sister, of course, as we all remember from the original Halloween. So I found the first half of the film to be somewhat interesting from the standpoint of, let's do something different. It only goes extremely downhill when it becomes a beat-for-beat remake, not necessarily a reimagining anymore, just a remake of the original Halloween. It really does take a turn in the second half where I was just aggressively irritated by how unoriginal it seemed. And not only that, throughout the film, you're treated to obnoxious performances and an overabundance of white trash, profanity-laden dialogue, and not one ounce of suspense in the whole endeavor. Like, there's nothing that made the original Halloween a classic. The only thing I can say about it is that it is interesting in the aspect of exploring the psychology of Michael Myers. That's where I feel like the film could have succeeded, but instead it just turns out to be, in the end, another rote, by the book, we've seen this already done 100 times remake.
Yeah. And I mean, I totally agree with you. It's been mentioned many times on many occasions by Zombie himself that what he pitched to Dimension and the Weinsteins was what he wanted to do was he wanted to do a two-picture thing for the first film. His first film was going to focus all on young Michael, the events of the first film when he actually kills his first victim, and seeing him and his relationship with Dr. Loomis, here played by Malcolm McDowell, and the whole psyche of the character, and play around with that, because that had been kind of only mentioned in brief little snippets throughout the series, but he really wanted to flesh that out. And in his second film, then it was going to be Michael's released out of Smith's Grove, and he was going to be on the loose in Haddonfield Halloween night, and you know, hijinks ensue, as you like to say, Loy Sauce. And of course, the studio was not going to go with that. If you're going to remake Halloween, they want an all-in-one movie. They wanted to give us the goods, give us Michael with the mask, with the knife, stalk and slash, kill the babysitter, as Mustafa Akkad always said, the boogeyman killed the babysitter. And that's how he always put it. And his son Malik here was in charge as a producer and kind of overseeing the whole thing. Obviously, at this point in time in Hollywood, they were remaking every classic horror movie they possibly could, and among other genres. So the idea went into place, and Zombie went and did his thing. And I really do think, Brian, that he did this with the purest passion possible. I don't think that he went in there with any underlining ideas like that he wanted to tarnish the Halloween franchise. I think he had always said that, you know, and this is actually me standing up for him a little bit, that all the sequels have been pretty much garbage. And I can see where he's coming from on his standpoint. The original is a classic, and everything that came after that, even John Carpenter doesn't care for his treatment and his script for the sequel to his film, which he wrote himself. So, I mean, I get it. I get where Zombie's coming from. Let's make this Rob Zombie's Halloween. He met with Carpenter, though rumors kind of say different ways of the story and how they happen. But he met with Carpenter, he called him, and Carpenter just said, I don't care. Make it your own. Do your own thing with it. So he made it fucking white trash. He made it pure white trash, where these characters are completely unbearable to listen to. The film starts out, and we're meeting this new young Michael Myers. And I get Zombie. I get his artistic sense, but he wants to cast the fucking ugliest living thing on the planet, a living troll. I'm sorry, Dag Farch, however you say your name. I know you're still at conventions. I've seen you at one in the corner, lonely, because no one wants to take a picture with you anymore, because you still look like yourself, except for you're an adult now. Not trying to hate, not trying to be mean-spirited, but seriously.
That was savage. No, but
you picked the wrong person for performance-wise and look-wise. I mean, man. I can't even say enough. This kid was the wrong person to play a young Michael Myers.
Well, I mean, you think about it, and if you're looking at at it from the context of what Rob Zombie was trying to do. Like, if there were a kid who were, you know, who was being bullied, he'd probably be bullied for being a little weird looking or
weird looking, maybe, but not like a fucking troll. The kid literally looks like a troll, man. There's no makeup at all. There's no prosthetics. That's just how the kid looks, man.
Confirmed Justin is a horrible person who likes being mean to children. I guess we all knew this, but
hey, you're the one that likes to see children dismembered and killed and slaughtered and, you know, get their heads cut off. So
this is very true, but I wouldn't call a child who is being decapitated ugly, because that's just mean.
You would just basically say how amazing their death scene was. But no,
I would just revel in their murder. But
exactly.
Anyhow, but what you see Michael Myers, young Michael Myers, unmasked in the original, and I'm going to be comparing the remake to the original a lot. It's just kind of unavoidable. But you see him unmasked in the original, and he's just a normal little kid. And that's what kind of makes it scarier to me, where it's like evil can come from anywhere and look like anything or anyone. And that's infinitely scarier to me than seeing this little long-haired pussy kid in his whiny little girl voice. And that's just not scary to me, you know? You know what I mean?
No, I totally agree. Like, again, we're beaten over the head with this whole theme of he's abused. He lives in a broken white trash household. His mom is a stripper, played, of course, by Rob Zombie's wife, Sherry Moon Zombie. He has to shove her in every fucking movie. And I'm not going to lie. I'll go on a limb here and say that out of all the performances in the film, there are some crucial scenes, emotional scenes that have to happen where she's actually not awful in them. Like, she's not great in the movie.
She's capable.
And who the hell, number one, Sherry Moon Zombie's beautiful woman, okay? She's very beautiful. And she looks beautiful in the movie. And she's kind of out of place in this household because her boyfriend, who is supposed to be like, not stepdad, but whoever she's dating at the time, who's this white trash piece of shit racist fuck, who's basically trying to bang her own daughter and who's constantly harassing her son. He just looks like a pile of shit. Okay, this guy's ugly. He's just, why would she date him? He's not bringing in any money. It makes no sense. Of course, he's just there for the plot to move along and for her son, Michael Myers, to hate because he's constantly badgering him. But you see the constant, he's being braided at home. He's getting treated like shit at home, but his sister doesn't care about him. His mom's constantly working because she's a stripper. Then he goes to school and he's obviously a bad kid. He doesn't care about...
He's bullied by Juni Cortez from the Spy Kids movies.
Who, spoiler alert, gets brutally murdered in a great death, mind you. You said you liked it.
I really liked that scene when little Michael Myers murders another child with a tree branch. Yeah, with a tree branch. He beats him to death. And it's really brutal and it like lingers. I admire Zombie for how much he's willing to go for the brutality, because it is like you see like the blood just like coming down his face and him calling out for help.
Dude, he's begging for his life. And I love the way the camera just spins around, like as if it was from his point of view after he's getting hit, and you know what it's like to fall or hurt yourself and your head.
But,
dude, literally.
But I don't like that scene at the same time, because I don't think Michael Myers should kill that early. I think it would have been so much more powerful to me if the first murder had been his sister. Again, like the original, it's like...
Out of nowhere, man. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You don't expect
it
at all.
Right. So, like, I feel like things needed to build up a little bit if he was going to go for... you know, we're going to see how it led to him murdering his sister. Having him kill so early in the movie is inappropriate. It's poorly timed. And also, again, in the original, it's much simpler and it's much more scary if there isn't really like a reason given for the murderer. It's just he's evil. Like, because that's what the whole point of the Michael Myers character is, the embodiment of
the
evil.
The shape, man. He's not even Michael Myers anymore. When he's the shape. And right before...
Which is clearly better. It's just clearly better.
Right before the scene is one of your favorite scenes where the principal catches him in the bathroom with the bully, and he says, "Fuck you," to the principal. And he said, "What did you say to me?" He says, "Fuck you." So, of course, the principal calls his mom in, and Dr. Loomis is brought in. And then
oh
your favorite scene in the movie happens right after that.
little Michael Myers is distraught that he's in trouble, I guess, and he's going to be sent to work with a psychologist. What is Dr. Loomis? He's a psychiatrist.
Yeah,
right,
psychiatrist. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So anyway, so he begins running down the hall, and what begins playing but John Carpenter's Halloween theme, the iconic Halloween theme, the complete most inappropriate part to play that theme for the first time in the movie. Why is this theme playing? That's the Halloween theme that is synonymous with the Michael Myers character. Why is this theme playing with a little kid running down the hallway?
It would have, dude, makes no sense.
It would have made so much more sense if they had introduced it maybe when he first put on the mask, or later in the film when Michael Myers goes back home to find the mask that he buried underneath the floorboards and just looking at it, he brings it up. Then the Halloween theme is playing. That would have been a much more appropriate time for the theme to play.
It's strange to me because when I looked up information about the film after we watched it recently.
What was he thinking?
Zombie actually oversaw. He was the music manager, so to speak. And I'm not going to lie here. I'm going to mention this right off the bat. I actually like what Tyler Bates did as far as the score in the film. I think a lot of his cues are great. I think what he did with John Carpenter's original cues and parts are, he does a fantastic job. He updates it. He still gives it that eerie modern synth feel. But the placement of a lot of the music was done by Zombie himself. And I find that extremely off-putting knowing because, dude, this guy is a musician first, more than a filmmaker. And he's been in successful bands, White Zombie. He's done his own stuff as Rob Zombie. He knows music. Like, his songs are coherent. They're placed well, everything about the production. But the way that they place the theme there, it's like, it doesn't fit at all. Among other things in the film that don't fit, which we're going to get into here. Let's start jumping into the cast here. Then we'll go back to elements of the film that we either cared for or didn't care for. Obviously, ladies and gentlemen, you're casting a Halloween film. You're remaking the original. You have to recast the most iconic role of the film other than Michael Myers himself. It's Laurie Strode. And here we found Scout Taylor Compton, who was an up-and-coming actress. This is who Rob Zombie felt was required to fill the shoes of, yes, Jamie Lee Curtis, the iconic actress who became famous from her role as Laurie Strode in John Carpenter's Halloween. And I got to tell you, Brian, I think she's absolutely god-awful in the film. I think she's horrible. And I don't think all of it has to do with her performance. I think that the dialogue that was written that Zombie put together for her just did not fit the character at all, as well as most of the dialogue from all of the characters in the film. Not everyone can be white trash, Rob, but dude, there's something about her that she's not likable. She's not that Laurie that we care about. She's not that Laurie that feels innocent. This Laurie's a little bit dirtier. This Laurie's got a foul mouth, and she likes to pick on little kids as she watches them and make fun of them. I mean, she's not a likable person at all.
The first time we're introduced to this movie's version of Laurie Strode,
God.
She literally walks into the scene and picks up a bagel and begins miming like penetration into the hole of the bagel.
She's making her poor mother, right
to her mother's face, and she's like making all these moaning sounds. And then like later on, she's talking with her friends, and they keep like talking about like fucking and sex and boys and penis and pussy, and like it's nonstop, and it becomes incredibly grating on the nerves to listen to these characters talk about nothing but just the most juvenile. I know they're in high school, and that's how some high schoolers might talk, but you're right, it does not make for a likable protagonist. We need a sense of purity. There's a reason why Laurie Strode became kind of like a last girl kind of icon in horror cinema, is because she had that purity to her. Her friends were a little bit raunchier, and she was kind of the moral center of the film that you gravitated towards. Here, there is no moral center. Everyone's a horrible person. Loomis.
Yeah, even Loomis. Let's jump on to him, because I'm not going to lie to you, man. When this film was originally cast, I was watching, paying attention to every little bit, every tidbit of news I could get. And when he was cast as Sam Loomis, I was so excited for more than one reason. At the time, I really was a big Malcolm McDowell fan, and I still am to some extent. I still love a lot of the stuff that he's done. And the simple fact that in real life, Brian, he was actually friends with Donald Pleasance. So that helped that he cared about that person, that performance that he put into this series, and he felt like the perfect person for the role. And when we get to the zombie sequel, I'll talk a little bit more about my disdain for his portrayal of the character, which was more about the script than his performance. But I felt like overall, I still think McDowell brought a pretty good performance in this film, particularly all of the early scenes with young Michael. Even though some of it wasn't edited that well, I feel like a lot of those scenes are pretty impactful.
I agree. I like Malcolm McDowell a lot. And I think you're right. A lot of those early scenes with young Michael Myers, again, that's the kind of stuff that could have been interesting, is the dynamic between Dr. Loomis and this kid. But it just wasn't, it wasn't presented well in the film. And despite his best efforts with the performance, I just don't like the way that the character of Dr. Loomis is written in these movies, especially in the sequel, which we'll get to. It's not McDowell's fault. He does what he can with the role. It's great that an actor of his caliber is in that role, because you want a classier kind of...
Yeah. And especially with the way Zombie always picks, you see in this movie, he picks people, great cast. Like, obviously, you see people pop up. You see Brad Dourif of iconic as Chucky. And yes, of course, we're going to get to her. But I mean, he really casts this thing well. You've got Udo Kier in it, even just as a small role. You've got Clint Howard in here as another random doctor. Danny Trejo, literally. Bill Moseley's in this in a small role. A lot of people are in this movie. And I loved the cast in this when I first saw it. I mean, and you got to kind of feel bad for how the film turned out. But overall, because Dr. Loomis is such an important piece of this puzzle for Michael Myers and Halloween, I really wish that he was better utilized. And I can see what you mean. He comes off a little bit selfish, even in this portrayal in this film. But let's move along real quick before I get pissed off. We've got the iconic, the fan favorite, the one that everyone was campaigning to get in the Laurie Strode role herself, Danielle Harris here. And we have...
Why wasn't she cast as Laurie
Strode?
She
came back as Annie Brackett. And she did go in. She auditioned for Laurie. And I guess the way that Zombie viewed it, and this isn't official or anything, but what we've heard through the grapevine is that he didn't want that focus to be back on the old films, the sequels that she's in, because of the fact that, oh my God.
So why cast her?
Because she plays Jamie's daughter in Halloween 4 and Halloween 5, and should have been in Halloween 6, but we know how that turned out. But, you know, so he decided, knowing that she's a fan favorite, there was a lot of campaigning to get her in this movie. A lot of fans wanted her in that Laurie role. Well, I can't have her in Laurie. It'll take too much away from the film. And I get his idea about that. But let's make her Annie. And I think she's actually pretty good in the movie. And it's great to see her show up here, especially when it came out, being a huge fan of Part 4. And I still am a huge fan of Part 4. I love her as little Jamie Lloyd in Halloween 4. You know, it's great to see you're back in this. What Zombie does, though, in this film, and of course his sequel, is he totally just shits all over her as an actress and makes her do things that I think that he may have thought the fans wanted and needed, that have been begging for. Of course, everyone thought she was hot the older she got, and he just uses it as an excuse to get her naked in this, and uncomfortably so, for like a full 5-minute scene, Brian, where she's just topless, laying there screaming and bloody after she's been attacked. I felt like it was completely tasteless, even for a slasher, even for a Halloween movie that Rob Zombie's directing. I felt like he went out of his way to kind of like just showcase her.
He lingers on it, and her nipple is like right in the center of the frame, and she's like covered in blood and screaming and crying out in anguish. And it's just incredibly uncomfortable to watch. You look at her performance in Halloween 4. She's a child. The character exudes a certain sense of innocence. Of course, it ends in a way where she, you know, is not so innocent, but throughout the film, I mean, she's a child, and to now look at her in this movie, in the same series, even though it is kind of like a rebooted version, it's just weird.
It feels strange. Because very creepy. You're looking at it as a fan, especially if you grew up watching the films with her, the sequels that she was
her
in
as a child.
And you love her as a child in those movies, and you do see her in other movies in the 90s and stuff. The point is he exploited her, I felt. And I feel like part of the discussion was when she was cast was, hey, I'll put you in this movie. I know a lot of fans want you in this movie, but you're only going to be in this movie if you're naked. And I guarantee you that was placed on her shoulders. And she probably just said, fuck it. This is my legacy. A lot of my fans want me in this movie. And like I said, I think she's great in this. And I think she's good in the sequel, too. I think she does the best that she's given with the material provided by Rob Zombie. It's just a shame to see her treated this way. I really feel bad about that. But moving on.
Wasn't she like 30 or something when the movie was made and she's playing a high schooler? Like, well, I mean, she looks young, but
they all, I think that's just the case with anything. But let's move on to the girl that plays Linda. Okay. Because this is the role that PJ Souls made famous. Totally fucking famous. The person they got for this role, Christina Kleb, I know a lot of horror fans like her, but I find her extremely flat in the movie. I think at best she's passable, but I'm like, in the original film, those girls were the unit that made the film solid. You had to care about the girls. You had to at least buy into the girls, or nothing else that happened after the fact would have mattered. And in this case, I feel like we've got one part of the puzzle right, and then we've got Scout and Christina there, and they're not relatable at all. They're all totally obnoxious, not likable characters at all, and you don't care about them enough, so when you see them die, you're actually begging to see them die. I don't know if that was Zombie's intent originally, but I mean, I don't know what you thought about her, but I think she's awful in the film.
I don't even remember her. I don't remember anything about her performance.
Wow. That just goes honestly to show you. That just goes to show you. There are some other standouts. Again, as I said, we do have, obviously, Rob Zombie loves to cast people that were in lots of other great movies in his movies. We had Dee Wallace as Laurie's mom. We had some other great people show up in this, and they're all good. I thought Brad Dourif was a great choice for Sheriff Brackett. You know, he's no Charles Cyphers, but he's a very capable actor, and I think he's good in the role. But let's move on to the centerpiece. Okay, because we already talked about Daig, who played young Michael Myers. In this version, Brian, Rob Zombie found it necessary to cast someone that was like 7 fucking foot tall. Tyler Mane, who's known mostly for playing Sabretooth in Bryan Singer's original X-Men film. He's the one the mask. It's him, man. It's him. He's the one to don the mask as his, not shape, no, because they want to remove the shape from this movie. That was very clear from the beginning. His Michael Myers. What was your first initial thought, and your overall thought, I should just ask, right now on his portrayal and the way he handled the character of Michael Myers in the film?
I actually don't mind the fact that he's this huge, hulking, imposing figure, because it's almost like he's like an animal, like almost like I just love how, again, Zombie really leans into the brutality. And when you see Michael Myers just hulking and just taking down people by throwing them into bathroom stalls, and it's kind of cool. It's kind of, I mean, it really is interesting to see that kind of brute kind of strength and that imposing hulking figure. I do think it's interesting that we see him without a mask early on in the film when he's still in the psychiatric ward and he's making all of these paper mache masks, like that whole
hundreds of masks, which is very interesting, though
that visual, yeah,
not realistic at all, because they never let him do that. But I mean, it definitely, no. I love that imagery of him making all the different masks and the idea that this person is obsessed with masks. I love that.
Yeah, it's a great concept. And you get to see a little bit of that until the ridiculous scene where two of the orderlies decide to rape a female patient.
Which seems
in
like
Michael
a drug
Myers,
addict, I guess. She seemed like a drug addict, yeah.
In Michael Myers' room, I guess to like taunt him, but that's the dumbest thing they could ever possibly do, because he's just, they're just in there, like in his
room.
Dude,
and they know. They're there to work there because they know that this person killed a lot of people. He killed someone as a kid in the establishment, and he kills a nurse. while he's a kid earlier in the film.
Right, and he's also 7 feet
tall. To be clear, I just want to make sure that our listeners know this before we ramble on too far. The version of the film that you watched was the unrated director's cut. Is that correct? You did not watch the theatrical cut.
Correct. So there is a long, extended, gratuitous rape scene in the director's cut.
Which was in his original cut as well. It's not in the theatrical, but he put it back in for his unrated cut.
Thank goodness, I guess.
No. I mean, the way he gets out, both ways he gets out of the sanitarium are both ridiculous. But of course, we know how he gets out in the original. It's also ridiculous. They're all just walking around aimlessly and yep, Loomis shows up. And so whatever, that aside. So overall, you liked what Tyler Mane had done as Michael Myers. I personally, at the time, I love how brutal he
is.
Well,
I'll say, I said that I liked the how huge he was. The portrayal, I am not a huge fan of,
okay.
But continue.
Okay. No, it's okay. So, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that overall, one of my favorite things about this movie is still one of my favorite things about the series. I fucking love the mask in this one, Brian. I love the mask. I loved it from the first shot I saw, the teaser image we got before the film came out. And I love it now because it is one of the closest masks to that original imagery we have from the first Halloween. Except for it's taking liberties with it. It's cracked. It's distorted. It looks like it's been buried under a house for however many years, because it has been. And I think that Tyler wears it well. I do think his imposing nature is a little bit too much. We never see an adversary go up against him where it makes it look like they can hit. It's like, dude, it looks like fucking Frankenstein, okay? The dude's like 7 foot tall. I don't know exactly how tall he is, but close enough. You know what I mean? He's just way too big, dude. Like, the reason why the shape, that's why I'm calling him the shape, because that's what he fucking is the shape in the original Halloween. And even in Halloween 2, is because he's a small guy, a regular sized guy. He's not muscular. He's not huge. He's just, the shape has taken over this body and using it. And that's how it moves. It glides. It's sleek. It's like a cat, dude. This thing is just a killer. That's all it is doing is killing. And in this case, Tyler Mane plays it more as like a large guy stabbing people with a big knife than this presence that's larger than life. So for me, I like the look of the character. Overall, not a big fan of his performance. So
I guess we'll get into this in the sequel as well, but how vocal he is, especially like when he's, you can hear him breathing, like you can hear him grunting and yeah, breathing, and it's, he should be strictly silent because that's how he, I mean, again, it's probably Rob Zombie saying, let's do something different that we haven't seen before, because in all of the other films previously, he didn't make a sound. But again, I kind of liked how it was a different take, how he was just kind of like an animal, almost like a bear, kind of, or a saber-tooth tiger, I guess you could say, tying it back to X-Men. I just kind of liked that animalistic sense that he had. But you're right, I think it would be much scarier and much in line with the other films if he were just a normal guy, just a normal stature, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The one thing here as we wrap up our talk about his Rob Zombie's first Halloween that I actually did like upon my first watch, and one thing that still holds up for me is the brutality. We know that Carpenter's first film is all suspense, a suspense-driven horror film. You know, the scares are very original in the sense that it's like a haunted house happening to you in the movie theater, and that wasn't something he wanted to do with his film, but I definitely understand that. Obviously, we've seen way more gore and blood and kills throughout a lot of the sequels leading up to Zombies film. So it was, you know, it's nothing new to the Halloween series, but he decided, fuck it. I'm going to give you some brutal kills. I'm going to make my Michael Myers literally slash people to death 1,000 times, and that's how he's going to kill. And I think overall, as a slasher fan, I think the kills all deliver, Brian. There's one kill that nailed me in the theater so hard, and it still nailed me to this day. And when I wanted to watch you as you watched the film for the first time and see if it got you, and it did get you. It nailed you. Like right against the fucking back of the couch. It's when Michael Myers goes up to Laurie Strode's house and walks up that slash right on the porch to her dad's throat. And it's like right out of nowhere. Zombie times it perfectly. It's like the only thing he does in the movie that's that well timed and perfectly captured is that one kill on the porch. And then he goes in, of course, and kills poor D. Wallace. Oh, poor D. Wallace.
Yeah, I jumped 3 feet in the air at that scene. That perfectly done, impeccably done. I appreciate the brutality. What he does not have a sense of is the suspense.
Zero There's, suspense in this movie. None. Yeah. There's none in it at all.
And again, I understand why there might not be as much suspense, because we've seen Michael Myers grow from a young boy to what he is now, and we kind of have a sense of who he is, and so it's not as scary as the original. But you could at least frame things in a way where you get a certain sense of building tension. There's none of that in this film. You just see Michael Myers walking around in broad daylight, and the way the camera is just kind of not even following him from behind, or like, it's not like the camera is like his view. It's just a side by side. You're just seeing Michael Myers just out in the open, just walking around Haddonfield, just and none of the stillness, none of the statuesque no movement Michael Myers. It's just constant him walking around, and
you see him too much, and I get the idea. It brings me back to a moment when I was watching the behind the scenes for Jaws 2. For some reason, this just comes up, and you're hearing the cast and crew talk about the fact that, well, when you made the first Jaws, that you'll never be able to get that first moment where the shark comes out of the water and Roy Scheider's chumming, and, you know, you're never going to get that moment again. So let's just show it as much as we can. Let's just give all the fans all they want. And it'll never be scary like it was the first time again. So let's not try in that way. And that's what Zombie did. We got literally Michael Myers walking down the street. Oh, Laurie Strode's walking down the street. There he is. There's a long shot of him just walking normally down the sidewalk. There's nothing scary about him at all, I don't think. And as we wrap up our discussion about the first film, I can't tell you what version I prefer more, if there is one. I mean, between his unrated cut that's on Blu-ray versus the theatrical cut, versus there is a cut that I watched 2 weeks after the film was released in theaters, Brian, which is supposedly the actual cut that he originally gave to the studio, which they screened, that got really high marks, actually. So what happened was, is he had a cut of the film. He gave it to Miramax and Dimension, and they loved it. And the crowd gave really high marks, and they said, everyone loves it. Here's more money. Go do whatever you want with it. So he went, he changed the ending, and he added this whole sequence, which is like the worst thing ever. It's not in his original version at all, where at the end, Laurie's trying to hide from Michael, and, you know, she's in the walls, and he's just crashing down the walls. He's taking boards and smashing them. And literally it goes on for like 5 minutes straight, and it's the most boring, obnoxious, tenseless scene out of any horror movie ever. It's like, literally, how many more minutes am I going to watch him taking a board and hitting through walls? You know, it's so boring. And I had showed you, it's on the special features on the Blu-ray out of the box set, the original ending that Zombie had for his first film. I don't know how you felt about that, but I really prefer, and I actually really liked and admired his original ending. Which one did you like the most?
Well, the original ending, you couldn't have had a sequel.
Okay, Michael dies.
Right. Well, but does he?
We don't really know, but it's a beautiful shot, an overhead shot, a crane shot. So he comes out of the house, he's got Laurie, he lets Laurie go, the cops shoot him, they like blow him away, as Loomis is screaming, no, no, don't, Michael, no! And then the camera pans out really close from his mask, and slowly, it zooms up, and it's playing. Carpenter's ding, 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 ding. It's that really long, drawn-out piano theme, and it's amazing. I loved that ending, but instead, we get the ending we got in the movie, Brian, which is they rustle and tussle out the top of the house. And for some reason, Laurie is just like, ah, ah, ah. She like shoots him in the face with the gun, and she's just screaming
for some reason.
And then the movie ends.
Yeah.
It's
a pretty piss poor ending.
Unsatisfying ending ever of all time. You're like, wait, what does that mean? What is that?
I'm thinking he just wanted kind of like a shocking kind of, I don't know. It has none of the weight or meaning of seeing Michael Myers lay there and the camera slowly pan up. Instead, we're just treated to Scout Taylor Compton, or whatever her name is, screaming at the top of her lungs while it awkwardly like jump cuts, like there are multiple like cuts as it like zooms into her face, and then it like just goes to black, and that's the end of the movie. I don't know, you're right, it's incredibly unsatisfying. It did not leave me satisfied or looking forward to a sequel, but
that's right, ladies and gentlemen. So at the end of this discussion, we're gonna get through the sequel pretty quick, because I'm sure you know, if you've seen the sequel, there's not much there as far as substance or fun to be had for even horror fans. But we'll kind of rate the whole both of his movies at once overall when we get to the end. But so obviously, Zombies film was not a gigantic hit, but it was pretty bankable for the studio. It made some money, and they said, well, fuck it, we want to make a sequel. Of course, these movies are made on shoestring budgets. It doesn't take a lot of money to market them. They have a brand recognition, so they're like, well, we're making another one. So they decided to jump in and make a sequel.
I killed him.
Who'd you kill, sweetie? Who'd you kill?
I killed
him. At first, Zombie was extremely hesitant. He did not want to make another Halloween, and I get it, dude. You know, you jump into one of these franchises, you make the best movie you can, and I still, to this day, even if I don't like his movie, I still feel like he did the best job to his ability to what his vision was for the character. Whether we all like it or not is up to us, but he shot his wad on what Halloween should be. He wanted to move on and do something else. Well, the studio said, nope, we're going to make a sequel to your movie. So production had already started on Halloween 2. In 2008, they were already working on it. They were getting a script together, and they were going to go along with it. And Zombie kind of had they're making a sequel to my Halloween. They're not just making a sequel to any other Halloween. It's just not another Halloween sequel. They're going to actually bring back the cast. And I got to do this thing. And of course, he wanted fucking money. He wanted a fucking paycheck. So Rob Zombie jumps in, not really that interested in the material. And within a month, Brian, he comes up with a script that they felt worthy enough. They deemed worthy enough to be shooting worthy. And they started production on Halloween 2. So Halloween 2, we jump right in. Zombie decided to focus more on the connection between Laurie and Michael and the psychological problems, almost that post-traumatic disorder that goes along with being in an experience like Laurie was in the first film, where her brother, yes, it's her brother. Of course, they had to connect that. They had to bring back the whole brother-sister thing. Came in to brutally murder her and terrorize her on Halloween. So in this movie, we pick up right where we left off, and Laurie's going through some serious problems. Oh, God, it's not a fun movie to watch, Brian. It's not even, for a slasher fan, fun to watch. It's so, God, oh. Oh, dude, just...
Calm down.
All right. It was.
We'll get through this together.
Okay, because I'm gonna tell you guys, ladies and gentlemen, after Zombies first film, and I saw it in theaters, and I went through the whole thing. I even bought it on DVD before Blu-ray was really a thing, and I watched it, and I still gave it another shot. And then when Halloween 2 came out in theaters, I was one of ten people at a midnight showing at the Regal Cinemas in Binghamton, New York, to see Halloween 2 opening night, August 28th, and.
Why was it released in August?
I have no idea. Halloween movies. I mean, H2O wasn't released in October either. A lot of times the Halloween movies are not released during Halloween. They should be, goddammit. That's what I want to see them. But I'm just a fan. What do I know?
The H2O tagline is "Terror won't be taking a vacation this summer," or something along those lines.
In this case, we got this shit in August, and I fucking hated it. I went with two of my friends, a good buddy, Brian Powell, who's a listener of the podcast, one of my good buddies. We used to play in bands together, and my old guitar player, Jeff Greeno. They're both huge Halloween fans, and they both enjoyed it. And I remember Jeff going, I loved it. It was great. It's like the best Halloween movie. And I just like, dude, I can't talk to you. I'm going to take a week off from you But all that aside, dude, all my bullshit, boring stories aside, you just watched this movie for the first time recently. Now, you may have had a few glasses of whiskey in you from Ned Devine's bar, and the hoaxer may have harassed you sexually before you watched it, but what were your initial thoughts on Rob Zombie's sequel to his Halloween?
I don't even really know where to start. At least in Halloween, like I said, there were interesting concepts and avenues that were explored. In Halloween 2, I don't know what Zombie was going for. Like I'm left in a state of confusion and disappointment.
Did the white horse confuse you, Brian?
Well, no. They kind of explain it at the beginning, cuz you know, Sherry Moon Zombie gives her son a white like horse for some reason. Like it's like, well, not an actual horse, but it's like a toy horse or a little statue, and it reminds him of her, I guess, because it's a gift that she gave him. So throughout the movie, and it's the thing that everyone talks about when they talk about this movie, but there are visions that Michael has, a grown Michael Myers has, of his dead mother with a white horse. And she kind of guides him spiritually, I guess, to kill people, and it's really pretentious and silly. I feel like Rob Zombie was really trying to, like, he's really navel gazing with this one, where he's like, I'm gonna delve into the psychology even deeper. And again, like, it would be really interesting to have a horror sequel that delves into dealing with kind of the fallout of the original. I feel like not enough horror movies do that, where you have a sequel and it's just people dealing with the effects of what happened in the first film. And that's what Rob Zombie attempts here, but not in any meaningful way, not in anything that pays off, really. It's just Michael Myers going around killing people while Laurie Strode yells a lot.
Yells and cusses a lot. Well, I'm going to tell you this right now. When I watched this movie, the first 15 minutes, I was extremely pumped for, because when the film was being made, a lot of fans were like, oh, this film's called Halloween 2. Is Zombie going to remake Carpenter and Rick Rosenthal's Halloween 2? We saw shots in a hospital and we're like, okay, this is cool. Whatever, it's fine. And if you haven't watched Halloween 2, or you plan to, or you're actually interested in watching Halloween 2, well, I'm just going to tell you right now, don't listen to this, because I'm going to fucking spoil it for you. Not to be a dickhead, but hey, we're a spoiler podcast and I'm an asshole. So the whole beginning of
this
movie,
you are.
It takes place where Laurie Strode is in the hospital. She's been attacked by Michael Myers. And of course, what happens? Oh, Michael Myers comes in to stalk and kill her. And I think the whole scene plays out pretty well for a traditional slasher. I think it's got some great shots in there. And the way he kills the nurse, oh my God, wait, who shows up as the nurse in this, Brian?
Octavia Spencer.
Oh my God. And she gets brutally slaughtered. Who would know 5 years later that she would end up getting, like, you know, critical praise for all these movies she's doing now. And she's such a great actress. I feel so bad watching it now. I'm like, oh my God, you actually like agreed to this in your contract? But she gets brutally slaughtered, like slashed like 1,000 times by Michael Myers.
Literally 87 times he stabs her.
Literally.
overkill.
So we get this great opening, right? Where it's in the hospital, you're like, yes, I love the original Halloween 2. Yes, this is like Halloween 2. We're in the hospital and everything. And then what happens, Brian?
It was all a dream.
And you immediately feel like you've been had. You're sitting in the theater. You've been raped by the director. You've been raped by this movie. You were just told you were going to get something, and you got something else. Wow, that quick in, it just goes to show Zombie wanted to either fuck with you or he didn't know what he was doing. That whole month that he put into the script, a lot of effort there. So then we move on, and it's literally a year after the events of the first film. Laurie Strode is now living with the Brackets. So we do have Annie back here. Danielle Harris is back in her role. And Michael's just been randomly missing since Halloween. He's presumed dead, but Laurie keeps having tons of nightmares about Halloween. She's dealing with her trauma through therapy with a fantastic genre actress who you actually thought was Carrie Fisher. Nope, sorry.
She looked like Carrie Fisher for a second.
They sound similar. They do, but Margot Kidder.
They sound similar. Yeah, Margot Kidder. But the camera, she's introduced, the camera's like, it's like a bird's eye view. And so you see the top of her head and then it slowly pans down. And it looks like she looks like Carrie Fisher. I'm sorry. I just have to say it.
No, she looks like her. She does sound like her a lot, actually. They do have very similar voices, actually. And they're both those spunky.
That smoker voice.
Exactly. And both those spunky 1970s wildfire chicks that they were, both fantastic. Love them both. But then we meet up with Dr. Loomis in this movie, Brian. We meet up with Dr. Loomis.
He's become kind of this opportunistic shyster, this, I wouldn't say a con man, but he's using the tragedy of the original Halloween.
Money, money, money.
To just roll in that sweet cash. He's written a book about his experiences with Michael Myers, and he is just using every excuse to just wring every kind of every cent he can get out of this. And it's an interesting direction to take the Loomis character, but at the same time, it makes you dislike him even more, because in the first one, he wasn't necessarily the most... What's the word
He's
I'm
not
looking
really likable in the first one. You don't really care about him. He's not that crazy, wide-eyed doctor that Donald Pleasance played him as. He's just kind of like this guy who feels like he needs to be there because he needs to be there. He doesn't really seem to have any actual true motivation to be there, because when he leaves in the first one, we're backtracking, but when he leaves Michael in the sanitarium in the first one, he's like, I can't do this anymore. I've spent too much time with you. Like, my life is basically ruined because I've done all this and I've spent all this time and wasted on you. I'm going to go live my life. And that's how he leaves him, basically. And in this one, it's like, fuck that. I'm making money off this bitch. Yeah. I'm glad you killed everybody. He is the Dr. Phil, Dr. Loomis in this one. He goes out to promote his tour with his new book. Of course, he's criticized by the public and they blame him for the actions of Michael Myers himself and exploiting the deaths of Michael's victims. But the book alone is actually the thing that where Laurie discovers that she's really Angel Myers. She's Michael's long-lost sister, which we already fucking knew in Rob's first movie, because they keep going back to the, oh, Boo, how are you, Boo? I love you, Boo. That's why he goes back in the first place, because he knows it's his sister. And this, we finally get that reveal. Oh, shock. Oh, my God. We didn't know that. So, of course.
Which zombie wants to piss on the original Halloween 2 a lot in interviews and stuff, but he does the exact same shit. In this one,
he likes to piss on and shit on all the sequels, but yet I would probably put most of the sequels, almost all of the sequels, above his sequel. Other than the fact that yes, he does bring in that brutality, which is fantastic. Again,
but yeah,
there's no suspense to be had in this either.
No, because Michael Myers spends so much of the movie. Again, there, you never get the sense that there's any looming sense of danger, because it's Michael Myers murdering a bunch of random people that he just happens to find while he's wandering in the wilderness. Like, it's not like he is trying to get back home. At some point, I don't know why he left in the first place. I guess he's just on the run, but he goes somewhere and then he returns at the end. I don't know.
He appears at a party. He kills some people and then he goes back to the Brackett house randomly. And then he fatally wounds Annie. So of course we see poor Danielle Harris again, getting the shaft and
again,
yeah, literally, she's getting terrorized. But I mean, of course, if we're not seeing Danielle Harris terrorized by Michael Myers, it would defeat the purpose, because, well, that's what she's been doing her whole career, is being terrorized by Michael Myers. But then she dies. She actually dies in the movie. She's dead. Michael kills her. And then he kills some more people. And then the whole ending standoff, we're just going to leave it at this. We're going to finish off our discussion about the second film with this standoff, which could have been really cool. I mean, so the police discover Michael and he lives in a shed. He's literally the fucking Hopester. He's fucking Michael Myers, the Hopester. He's a hobo bastard. He's got this huge long beard, long hair. Loomis arrives and tries to go inside to reason with Michael. Lori's there hallucinating. Who knows what the fuck kind of shit she's on at that point. And nothing's going to work out here. Michael kills and Loomis is dead. And yep.
Michael actually says his
he speaks.
Yeah, he says his only line of dialogue, which what do you think Michael Myers would say if he had one line to say in a movie, Justin?
Candy corn. Just give me some fucking candy corn.
Close. He goes, "Die." That's so stupid.
Oh my God, it's so inspiring. It makes me want to be that guy that hangs around. Oh, and just to think, I get to see Rob Zombie this summer play live. Oh boy.
I'm sure that'll be a great show, but he can't write a script.
It's true. You know, I like seeing him on stage, but this movie, and I get it though. I mean, the production was already into place. Like, I know that movies happen fast paced all the time where someone has to jump in, and I get it. Like, he didn't want anyone else making a sequel to his vision of his Halloween, and so he jumped in quick, and what they delivered was a very subpar product, and
his vision sucks.
And even after this film, there was development that they were going to make a Halloween 3D. Yeah, that was already going to be put into production, and then nope, they cut that off, and then so we have not had a Halloween movie since, and that's why almost literally we're thinking almost 10 years later we're finally going to get another Halloween movie, and that's why I'm so excited. And reflecting back on these films makes me appreciate the fact that we're getting another one, because this last one, this could have been the nail in the fucking coffin. But we all know as Halloween fans that we get decent Halloween movies, we get really good ones, and we get ones that are awful. But the Halloween franchise will always continue because it's that staying power of the shape of the Halloween season, of what John Carpenter established with his classic film, that score, that atmosphere. That's what makes it so special. And that's what gives us fans that opportunity to revisit the franchise with new filmmakers year in and year out, however long it's going to take. We're going to get more Halloweens. But unfortunately, we just had to sit and talk through these ones. But I'm going to throw it to you for your final thoughts. You finally got a chance to watch these films back to back within a couple of weeks. What are your final thoughts, Brian?
I'm glad I watched them. Just for context, I've always been interested in all aspects of the Halloween franchise. I mean, I'm still wanting to see the television cuts and the producer's cut of Halloween 6 and all of that. Like, I'm just very interested in this series. Through its ups and downs, the zombie films, I feel like, are extremely flawed, with none of the suspense that I would want from these films. Rob Zombie did what he did. He tried to make it a little bit more character driven, delve into the psychology a little bit more. But I just don't think he was the right person to write the scripts for these movies, because his dialogue is risible. The characters are awful and supremely unlikable and aggressively irritating. There are a few things that I like throughout, little moments where I can appreciate. You know, in Halloween 2, there's some cool, brutal deaths. I love the part where he grabs the hooker and smashes her face repeatedly into a mirror. Like, that's neat stuff. That's, you know, stuff, the brutality that I like when I watch a slasher movie like this. But those moments are too few and far between. And Halloween 2 especially, I feel like, is extremely pretentious and navel-gazing, and just in the worst way. And I'm honestly glad that we never got to see Rob Zombie do another film, because honestly, Halloween 2 is lowest of the low. I would rank it at the bottom of the franchise, in my opinion.
Even below Halloween Resurrection?
I said near the bottom.
I got to get this on the air. If you had to pick one to watch that you were absolutely forced to watch, would you rather watch Halloween 2 by Rob Zombie or Halloween Resurrection by Rick Rosenthal?
I hate you.
You have to do it. It's on the air for our fans. For our fans, Brian.
Halloween Resurrection has the novelty of it being just like really cheesy 90s slasher. And there are a couple moments in it.
Trick or treat, motherfucker.
I mean, yeah.
That, you get to see Busta Rhymes spin kick Michael Myers with that shiny, beautifully you know, sculpted mask. I don't know.
It's the cringiest shit ever. But I honestly don't know. I think I would rather watch Halloween Resurrection, just because the dialogue in Halloween 2 is so aggressively profane and It's just, dude, the characters are constantly screaming obscenities at each other. Every other word is the F word. It's obnoxious to listen to. I think I would watch like the highlight, like a highlight reel on YouTube of Halloween 2, like kind of like the kills in the movie. Like I'd watch just like just a video of those. I don't know. I can't imagine sitting through the whole movie again. So as much as I hate to say it, Justin, I think I would rather watch Halloween Resurrection again.
There
I think
you have
Halloween
it.
2, I think Halloween 2 is a better made film, but Halloween Resurrection has a little bit more of the cheese factor to it.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. So overall, your experience with zombies films are extremely mixed. Overall, though, negative. And, well, you know, for me, I supported both of these films. I paid for my tickets to see them. I own them both on Blu-ray. Well, only because they came in the box set. Thank you, Shout Factory. Thank you, Shout Factory. Hey, they packaged them all together. I mean, they come along with it. So it's not like
it's
bought
a nice
them individually. But you know, the truth of the matter is I gave them both a shot. I give every movie a fair shot. And there are things, like Brian said, that I do admire, that I do like. I wish that Zombie had stuck with his guns on his first film and said, nope, I'm going to make my film separately or not at all. But he took what was given to him. And as an upcoming filmmaker who had just made one decent movie and one really good movie, I understand why he made the decisions he made with the sequel. I have no remorse for you, Zombie. You fucked up majorly. You ruined what could have been a good franchise. And well, you know what? If these movies being made is helping us get David Gordon Green's Halloween reboot slash sequel that is going to basically erase everything that happened after John Carpenter's Halloween, I'm totally cool with that. I'm just praying that it's a decent movie, and that's all I want.
Yeah, I was about to say, don't speak too soon.
I'm knocking on wood right now. You know, you never know what's going to happen, but I'm extremely excited for it, and we just wanted to give you guys, our listeners, another B-side, and hey, with that new Halloween movie coming, it's the 40th anniversary this year of John Carpenter's Halloween. We wanted to give you the goods and talk about zombies Halloween films. So overall, no actual number ratings for these films because I think they'd be too low for your ears to hear. But that's it for this episode of Epic Film Guys B-Sides. We talked about Rob Zombie's Halloween films. And hey, look out for more B-Sides. If Boy Choss A1 Steak Sauce wants to go off his fucking ass and actually do something and, you know, stop eating popcorn and munching in my ear, maybe if he stops hanging out with the Hopester. I don't know. I think he's secretly hanging out with the Lisp. Like, I think they're actually, like, dating secretly, about to be married. I don't know. You're doing something, Brian. You're doing something secretive you don't want to tell me about. That's why you don't want to do B-sides. But as long as I can keep you on a chain and focused, we can do more for you guys. But thanks again for listening. Be sure to check out our Facebook page, Epic Film Guys. You can get all of our episodes at www.epicfilmguys.com or on your favorite podcatcher, including Spotify. Check us out on Instagram at Epic Film Guys, Twitter at Epic Film Guys, and we're everywhere you want to be. Check us out. But for myself, for Loy Sauce, ding 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 ding. I'm Epic Film Guy Justin, and we will see you
at the movies.